Sean, I have fallen in love with a new tool that we have in this world. It is called ChatGPT. And I told ChatGPT to write us an intro for the podcast. I played around with it a little bit. I sent you one of the examples, but here is what we're going to start with today. Are you ready?
Here we go. Robots
Are you
doing the pod.
ready?
Robots doing the pod. I'm in.
Robots doing the pod. We're out of a job. No more millions. Welcome to today's episode of the Guy at the Movies podcast. Today we'll be diving into the latest news, bringing you up to speed on everything that's happening in the world of cinema. From new releases to casting announcements, we'll cover it all. So buckle up and get ready for an exciting ride. Whether you're a diehard movie fan or just someone who enjoys a good flick every now and then, we've got something for you. So sit back, relax, and let's get into it.
Sounds good.
Hayden.
Everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had. So this movie was garbage.
What is this?
You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing. You know what I mean?
How?
You know, you're lucky to have me back.
You're never going to get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up.
So chaotic.
Welcome to the Guy at the Movies podcast. I am Joe. He is Sean. Sean, how are you?
I am doing wonderful, Joe. How are you doing?
Oh, just delighted to be here after a fun morning with the dog, deciding to do his best Mephisto and cause me a just cause terror.
I thought it's decided to be his best Mephisto and just never showing up even when. So, yeah, at least the dog's there.
Remember when the rumor, and maybe it's true, but Sacha Baron Cohen was cast as him?
Well, that is the latest rumor right now, because it was Al Pacino in WandaVision. Remember WandaVision?
Al Pacino? I don't remember that.
Yeah, Al Pacino was rumored to show up as Mephisto in WandaVision.
Oh my God. Oh my God. This is episode 137. We're going to dive into two big films this week, Shazam Fury of the Gods and John Wick Chapter 4, and then get into some of the movie news that we love to, you know, banter about, if you will.
That's my best banter is going, I can give you a single letter for this podcast. Take that, ChatGPT.
All right, let's get into the trailers this week. A little bit of an odd week for trailers, but I figured these would be fun to talk about.
when you say odd, it's just low week for trailers. Very low week.
Sean, were you a Power Rangers fan growing up?
So this was interesting because I was them for Halloween. I remember watching them, but I don't remember. Like, there's so many people that remember so much about them. Mm-hmm. I don't remember a single thing about them, really.
Wow.
Now, this trailer did bring back, actually knock loose a few memories. But I think I was just, like, very young, so very stupid. And I was just like, hey, they're, like, punching each other in colorful outfits. I was at that age of viewing where, like, there was no real plot that I was, like, digesting mentally, if you will.
The third act wasn't giving you problems back then?
Back then, I wasn't just like, I don't know about this C plot.
We got the trailer for Power Rangers Once and Always. So Netflix has acquired like the Power Rangers kingdom, essentially, and they are kicking off their I don't know, ownership of Power Rangers or licensing with a reunion special because it's like 30 years, I guess it is, which is insane to me. Which makes me feel very
hurt.
Old.
That really hurt in the trailer seeing that when they're just like 30 years in the making, or they've been gone for 30 years. And I was like, God.
Yeah, right. But we get a trailer that brings back a lot of the old characters. They're doing like a reunion that's not just like a sit down and talk reunion. It's kind of like a reunion special, you know, episode, if you will. Some of them apparently, you know, some of them don't look like they got much notice for this. But there's a lot of fun callbacks to the series. Rita is now a robot, but there's a lot of theories online. There's stuff going wild about this already, which I love. The Power Rangers like back in the mix of, you know, TikTok videos and stuff. But, you know, Rita's back in this and we get some, I don't know, it's a nostalgia. Like by the end of it, I was like, this is so corny. I can't wait.
Well, what I really liked about this, and you know, I can't say anything about the recent Power Rangers movie because I didn't see it, so I won't pass judgment on it. But I think my biggest issue was that they like tried to like modernize it and fancy it up.
You just passed judgment.
Well, that was my biggest like. That's why I didn't see it. In other words, that was my problem with it, if you will. You're right. I cannot say anything to the quality of the movie because I didn't see it. But what I will say is that I didn't love that they were like modernizing everything a little bit too much. And this seems like they're keeping everything classic with like the ridiculous, like terrible effects and the like goofy costumes, and everything seems to be like they're keeping the effects retro as well. And, you know, while I understand why, you know, you update effects for a new movie and everything like that, you know, this powers that nostalgia brain a lot more. And so I think that's going to be like what makes this a little bit more successful than usual.
Yeah. Our friend Gaius of Back to the Blockbuster and G-Reels would argue with you, because we are both defenders of that movie in 2017 that they originally had five or seven movies they had planned or something. Like Lionsgate was like, let's go. And then that first movie underperformed and they were like, sold.
Let's sell it to Netflix. No, I need to go on record saying that I cannot say bad things about this movie. That was just my turn off from the trailers alone. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe in order, I was saying in order to make this understand this Netflix property, maybe I need to see that. I don't think so. I think I'll get the idea of it. But there's stuff that I forgot from Power Rangers that I like all of a sudden started to remember from this. And I was like, oh, okay. So this actually, like this, I think they're really keeping this authentic to the series, which is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where they're going to go with it after that. I had read a while ago, and maybe we talked about it on the pod, that they wanted to, Netflix wanted to do like a series that would tie into movies, and it would be like a big to do. Because I've said this for a long time, that is a property that you can really make a lot of money from, because so many of us grew up with it every day. I mean, it was really weird how they filmed it, because the scenes, like in the first season, especially, were taken from a Japanese show, the scenes where they're fighting and everything, and then they literally just cast, like, you know, American actors and just,
like, fill it in with plot, which is just so ridiculous.
Put plot around it. There was you're talking about the effects, though, and there's one thing I was reading that I actually really appreciated. When they showed the Zords in this, they didn't go like 3D and crazy CGI and stuff. They kept it to what it was in the past, and I think that was a really cool nostalgic decision that they made, which I don't know. It's probably going to be really corny and terrible, but I'm pretty pumped for it.
I think like that was their goal here. They said, you know what, we're not going to, like, you know, first of all, you know, I don't know what their budget was, but I'm sure they could afford a larger budget. But I think,
well, when they got rid of the Nancy Myers movie, they suddenly had.
See, I like, that's what I think about. I think about, like, you know, GLOW's cancellation for season 4. I think about Nancy Myers. Like, I'm just like, God damn! that's what I think about when I watch this Power Rangers trailer, which I'm excited for, don't get me wrong, but that's the problem. But I think these decisions were intentional, where they said, you know what, like, you know, maybe that was one of the criticisms that people had for the Power Rangers movie, where, you know, there's like, it's not like our childhood. So they're like, okay, you want it like your childhood? Here you go, buddy.
Like, here you go, assholes.
Like, there's a reason Sesame Street puppets are not CGI right now. They are still like the puppets. I think it's because there's something there that keeps adults tied to it as well.
That's because the United States government keeps cutting PBS's budget. But
damn it. Hey, I'm trying to find the silver lining here.
Let's talk about the next one here. Oh boy, this is Tommy Wiseau, whatever.
Tommy Wiseau, technically.
Wiseau, whatever. Him. I'm gonna let you talk about this because you. I never saw The Room, but this is Big Shark, his follow up to The Room.
So yeah, I have like so many issues with this. I mean, I'm someone that thinks like The Room was its own crazy situation, its own crazy thing. This guy had a ton of money, so he put this billboard up for an entire year for this movie. It's become a cult hit. It's obviously like bad. It's obviously not good. Now there's like the weird think pieces that say, but is it good? It's like, no, it's actually a bad movie. It's considered one of the worst movies. So, but it wasn't self-aware. It was intentional. Now, you know, I don't know. Is Tommy in on the joke this time? Is he not? I wonder, because the guy is quite a character, so he might think that everyone thinks his movies are great and he's a great filmmaker. I don't know. There's something strange about this where it just – it stinks to high heaven. It's like, is he intentionally making a bad movie? Is he not? And I wonder if this is what his, like, next movie is. Now everyone is, like, of course, from an ironic standpoint, very excited for this. You know, irony can only stretch you so far. You know, like, sometimes jokes get a little bit out of control, like 2016 elections or Fast and the Furious movies. And I think that, like, I worry that this is one of those things where people are going to, like, say, like, no, but is it actually good? It's like, no, it's not. And then it's going to be, like, weirdly popular for those reasons. I'm someone that, like, yeah, I've seen The Room. I don't consider it a cult hit. It's interesting what happened with it. I like the idea of, like, what the culture is surrounding it. The study and the conversations I've had with it are more fascinating than the actual movie, which is just genuinely bad. Like, it's genuinely a bad movie. There's no way you can, like, form anything around that. So, like, this is just going to be, like, it's not going to be The Room. People are going to be disappointed. They're going to try to push it the same way, but you're not going to get that same magic. I mean, you know, you think about Ed Wood movies, like Ed Wood died, like, you know, drunk and penniless, but, like, his movies are now examined later on. And Ed Wood was, like, the previous Tommy Wiseau. And, you know, I appreciate these people because they have a true love for cinema without, like, actually, you know, making movies proper, but, like, they have something there where they have an appreciation for the art form, but they fall over with it. And I think, like, you know, if Ed Wood were to make a movie now, it would obviously come out to be, like, utter crap, but he would, like, try to, like, steer into it intentionally, which, you know, just doesn't work as well.
Yeah. Listen, that's much more context to this than I could have given. I watched this little trailer and was like, oh, the acting is terrible, the graphics look horrendous, and why is the water suddenly in the street and there's a giant shark that's behind them coming to get them? That was my analysis of this. What I think is interesting is one of the actors in this is Greg Sestero, who wrote The Disaster Artist based on his experiences in the with The Room.
Yep.
So that's kind of fascinating that he's in this as well. But
yeah, he was in The Room as well. And so, like, that was his whole experience. And I believe he was Dave Franco's character in the movie The Disaster Artist.
This looks horrendous.
This looks
so stupid.
Yeah, this is not going to be as fun as people want it to be. This is not going to be as fun as people think it's going to be. I feel like I'm being a major buzzkill with it because, like, it's not supposed to be good. No one thinks it's going to be good, but I just don't think it's even going to be enjoyable.
Do you know what the tagline is?
Oh, God.
Can New Orleans survive? And apparently the copyright was 2019-2020 on this image I'm looking at.
Huh.
So this must have been sitting around for a while.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like a movie that's really, like, getting the benefit of the doubt with a release right away.
Yeah, that is. Oh God, what are we doing here? What is this shit? Oh God, bright light. What are we doing here? All right, let's get into what we've been watching. We have a few things that we need to cover this week that we, one in particular, Shazam. We're a little bit behind on that, but we need to chat about the somewhat of a dumpster fire around that. And then we'll get into John Wick chapter 4. But Shazam! Let's talk about Fury of the Gods. This is an interesting movie for me because when I first saw it, I was like, oh, this isn't as bad as I expected. Like, I was expecting a true dumpster fire and a film that just didn't make sense and was being burned off by DC as they move forward to, you know, whatever the DCU will be under Peter Safran and James Gunn. But I actually had a good time with this. I didn't mind it. I had a good time with Shazam. However, the next morning when I woke up after thinking about it a lot, I was like, ooh, the characters are really thin, not well developed. It's a lot of retread from the first movie. The fact that Billy Batson is like a quiet, trying to figure his life out character and then turns into Shazam, who's a complete and total jackass, didn't make sense for me. And it kind of dampened my spirits around the film. I do think that there's still something here for families. I think it's an accessible movie. Helen Mirren was clearly having a lot of fun doing it. She knew what this plot was. She was with that. It's so simple.
The villain motivation is a little bit strange. So if she was talking about that, she's like, I'm not exactly sure what my character's doing in this.
Yeah.
Like, I could agree with her there.
Lucy Liu was menacing in this, and Rachel Zegler was kind of underdeveloped, in my opinion, but lovely. Yeah. I love Rachel
Very
Zegler.
Very charming.
Yeah. But I, the true standout for me, I always get it reversed. Was it Jack Dylan Glazer? Grazer?
Jack. I always mix up if it's Glazer or Grazer.
Grazer, yeah. He was wonderful. He was he was so funny in this, and his scenes with Digimon Hunsu were incredible.
Thank God for those two, like, you know, having like a great little banter back and forth. I thought that was a great way to keep that character in. Yeah, I'd say that's the bright spot for me is Jack Dylan Grazer, because and I believe this was Glenn Weldon had this take where he's certain that Adam Brody and Jack Dylan Grazer were like, you know, talk to each other a lot and like actually like figured out their, you know, it's weird to say chemistry because they're never in the same scene together, right. But I think they like figured out their personalities and how they matched. And I thought that was like the bright spot there. While Zachary Levi and Billy Batson's actor, I don't think have ever met based on what I saw there. This movie just rang very hollow for me. And this is coming from someone who loved the first Shazam. I thought it was like a really like, you know, like great surprise for the DCEU at that time. I was like really like loving everything about it. It was a fun little body swap movie. It was just a lot goofier and a lot more fun. And this one just like it kind of had that humor just a little bit at certain touches, but it was just completely hollow in emotion. While the first one really did a good job developing that character, this one, you're right. It just like, you know, they felt like two different characters completely. And it just like I didn't really like either of them, and you know you didn't really see Billy Batson at all. I just thought that this one tried to push that same emotion that he has, where he's in a foster family, and you know there's the difficulties surrounding that, but that just did not work at all in this one. And that like, yeah, no, these movies don't have to have this like deep inner emotion. They don't have to have that. Well, the other one we're going to talk about doesn't really have that, and we liked it way more. But
true.
I think that like this one tried to have that emotion. And when you try and fail, that's where, you know, I think that, you know, just make the fun comic book movie. Don't try to go for these emotional beats that really didn't make a lot of sense. I'd say that, yeah, like I enjoy Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu. I think Rachel Zegler is very charming, but those villains were just, and we'll talk about, you know, how those villains could work. Those villains were just so strange and weird, and I didn't really get either their powers or their just in general, like their motivation behind it all. I know they were trying to do the whole thing where it's like, you know, well, humans are terrible, so we should destroy them. But it just went like back and forth and their conflicts didn't make a lot of sense. They could have fished something great out of that, by the way. Yeah. They had like three people like all in different conflict. And I was like, oh, there could be something good here. But instead, it just like really fell flat. And there's some stuff I really liked in this. I thought Megan Good was amazing. I thought you could like, you know, people said like, oh, the super family was stupid at the end of Shazam. I was like, I thought that was great. And I wanted to keep that going. And they did, but they just didn't do it the right way. And, you know, the movie is like, what, 2 hours already. So not that I'm saying to pad more runtime, but they just didn't focus on the right stuff to make me like this one at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It felt like they were trying to go bigger because they have to for a sequel, but also didn't have the story there, didn't have the developed conflict with Shazam there. You know, the beats to go from, you know, he's over controlling with his family and stuff like that, and you know, trying to find who he is as a superhero, to like, I'm going to sacrifice my life for everyone. Like, there was no development there.
Yeah.
Which was really fascinating to me. I don't know. It's frustrating because I don't want to see properties like this fail, but there needed to be more there. I've read a lot about how when they were writing the script for the second film in the, like right after the first one or whatever, they were incorporating Mark Strong's Dr. Sylvana. And I always forget the name of the worm and whatever, but the story felt very much like a retread of the first film. And it's fascinating because I feel like this, what they ended up with, was a retread of the first film in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I had like an existential crisis after this one and after this year where I'm just like, have I become this snob that hates superhero movies now, or am I just undergoing superhero fatigue, or is this just a crop of bad superhero movies? And I'm trying to figure out where I stand with it.
I think it's the latter.
I really hope so, because I don't want to be someone that all of a sudden rails against superhero movies, because I'm not a fan of those people. I don't like being those people. I think I never wanted to be those people, and so now I'm like getting very sad that I keep on crapping on these movies. And I know that the fact that you're with me is like, okay, I know I'm not just losing touch with or the opposite of losing touch with reality. I don't know, but I feel like I'm not just like becoming like someone with his head up his own ass with movies, and I'm trying not to be that. I never was that with the superhero movies. I loved them. They were entertaining. They were fun. Like, they were a little bit cotton candy, but they had something below too that was great. And like recently, it's just like, well, the fun part's not really working. The underneath story isn't really working. So I'm getting scared. Like, what's happening with them? Is it just a sign of, like, you know, we always have this crisis with superhero movies. Are they officially done? I don't think so. No. But I mean, this is a bad streak. I mean,
we've seen these stories before. I think that's the problem. Like, every movie is diving into the same old stories that we've seen with different characters. And, you know, on the Marvel side, their system for developing sequels seems to be like, add in another superhero, right? Like, you have Ant-Man, then you have Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then, like, you know, now you have, you know, just keep adding people in. Or whether it's, you know, with Thor, Love and Thunder, you're adding additional characters, things like that. On the DC side, it's kind of harder to figure out, because it's been so all over the place. Interesting, though, we should mention, Zack Snyder's been teasing this SnyderCon stuff, and what it ended up being is, in LA, they're doing like Q&As and big screen screenings of the director's cuts of his three films, which they're now referring to as the Snyderverse trilogy, in conjunction with Warner Brothers, which I thought was pretty cool. Like, Warner Brothers is actually behind this, and I think it's Warner Brothers' way of being like, all right, we're going to give you this, let's package it and be done.
Like, they need a bit of good, they need some good juju right now.
But they're raising money for suicide prevention, which is incredible. But in saying that, you have the Snyder stuff, you have these shots at, like, Aquaman was really good, and then the second one apparently is horrendous, if test screening reports are to be believed.
Which usually test screening people lie about something being good. Yeah. So the fact that they're saying it's bad is like even worse.
They've just been all over the place trying to find their rhythm. And I don't know. I feel like we're at a point where we need something new from these superhero movies. It sounds like The Flash is giving us that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't really know. Think about Marvel again. I loved Eternals because it gave us something different. Yeah. It was focused on the storytelling. It was more grounded in a lot of ways. It's funny because it's like a really alien-esque story, but it was grounded.
There was some humanity in it, even though none of them are humans. There was humanity there.
But we're not getting that across the board, and I think that's what's frustrating.
Yeah, I think that the problem, Shazam is just at this time where it had to shoulder a lot of the problems with all superhero movies. It's just kind of like, it's just getting hit all at once with them. So, like, I feel bad for it in the sense of just, you know, it's kind of the worst of all types of superhero movies, and the criticisms that, like, I'm now starting to understand from those people, where it's like, oh man, you guys just came in at the wrong time, I think, because there's fun stuff here. I laughed, I chuckled, but like you said, as I stepped further and further away from it, I was like, God, I think that I like this less and less.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird. It was a weird experience. I do think that, you know, also reading what David Sandberg, the director, has been sharing, puts some things into perspective. Like, you know, Rachel Zegler's character, you knew right away was, because it's in the marketing. You knew the big cameo was going to be Wonder Woman because it was in the marketing.
See, I actually missed those later trailers, so I was a tiny bit surprised.
There you go. Well, and they, you know, they played with the whole issue from the first movie where they couldn't get Henry Cavill, so it was a headless whatever. They played with that. I didn't think it worked. Did you think that worked?
Like, I mean, well, no, it's weird when that happens and then she's a cameo later. I think that that's the weird part of that, but I don't know.
They said that was like a tongue-in-cheek thing the writers put in there, and I was like, ooh.
Yeah, it just felt off, but then, I mean, you know, having Jamin Hounsou's head on her body did like kind of like give me a little chuckle, because then I'm like, okay, so it was, the whole thing was a dream. That makes a little bit more sense. I mean, one of my big issues, and you know, it was my issue with Scream 6, obviously not to the same prevalence, but it's like, oh no, spoilers kind of. Oh no, Shazam's dead. And it's like, does anyone think
are he's... you talking, when you mentioned Scream 6, are you talking about Mason Gooding?
I'm just talking about the fact that they had like three different people that were fake out deaths in Scream 6. Mason Gooding, Courtney Cox, and, you know, like, and Jasmine Savoy Brown. I want those people to survive. I talked about this last episode. I want those people to survive, but don't like stab them a million times, like presume dead, and then all of a sudden they're back again. It's like that takes a lot of stakes out of it. I'm saying with this one, like this format is so damn familiar. Where like no one, he's not dead. Like,
I know.
It was like one of these things that just bothered me so much. I'm like the emotion is just completely gone from this thing.
And if I like, was. If the writers presented me with the third act where Shazam dies and then gets resurrected, I would have been like, no, did you see what happened with Batman versus Superman and how people lost their fucking shit? Don't do it. Like, be a little bit more creative here with where you're going. I don't. Should we talk about the drama behind the scenes with The Rock and Zachary Levi? I'm eating this up.
You are loving this way more than me. I'm like, I don't really like either of these people anymore.
I don't like Zachary Levi. I don't know what it is.
Like, I think like The Rock is coming out looking pretty bad in this. So
looking like an arrogant asshole. Okay, so here's what's happening.
Start off with it.
Spoilers a little, not a little bit. Spoilers. If you haven't seen the film, but the post-credit scenes, there's a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene. The mid-credit scene has Emilia Harcourt and John Economos from Peacemaker fame coming to see Shazam, who is I don't know, at a gas station shooting cans with lightning bolts out of his fingers because okay, the backstory is, so after this first debuted, there was talk about like, wow, these two were involved, that's really fascinating. And James Gunn got accused of casting his wife and everything online, and it's really, you know, there's a lot of shit there that we'll unpack a little bit. But David Sandberg came out, the director, and said that they were supposed to have other characters in those positions prior to like the shoot day, but a couple days before they had to reverse course. What's come out since then is that it was going to be Hawkman and Cyclone from Black Adam that were going to be those two characters that go and invite Shazam to the Justice Society, which I did think they played this really well, by the way, in that it was really funny. He was like,
was still very
like the Justice, and he's like, I'm in. They're like, you know, when he goes, Justice Society, is that different from Justice League? She's like, yes, that's why it's called Justice Society. Anyway, but what has come out since is that The Rock put the kibosh on that. The Rock was the one that was like, no, that's not happening, we're not having them in the post-credit scene. This was reported by The Wrap. And remember, too, that The Rock was also the one that kind of poo-pooed having Black Adam in the Shazam sequel, because he was trying to center Black Adam and himself as like the center of the DCU of the, you know, he's like the savior and all that bullshit. But, you know, Shazam himself, Zachary Levi, came out and retweeted or reposted the report from The Wrap. And pretty much just said the truth shall set you free. And people are like, is he saying that this is wrong or whatever? But he hasn't come out to clarify. So I believe the way I'm reading that is he's like, yep, that's what happened. And David Sandberg has pretty much said like there was a lot of bullshit behind the scenes that happened here. And that's why this stuff didn't make sense. Apparently, this stuff with Emilia Harcourt and John Economos was filmed a while ago, even before James Gunn took over. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was fascinating, because when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is an interesting way that they're leaving it open for the future. They probably shot this like, you know, in the past month or something, but apparently that's not the case. So this is just a lot of The Rock, like, you know, the thinking that the DCU was going to change and whatever. What was he saying? It was
the hierarchy
of the DCU, of DC's, whatever. What's also fascinating, though, Sean, as a movie insider, as such a movie insider as you are, and we talk about box office results and stuff, Shazam only made $30 million in its opening weekend, and Black Adam made $67 million. So, like,
I think, people were just a little bit more interested in Black Adam, I think, just in general, because it was, you know, a quote-unquote new superhero where,
and
you know, while people like, and also it's The Rock, but people liked Shazam, but I don't think anyone was really jazzed about a Shazam sequel. I know I wasn't, and I feel great though, because I contributed to Shazam twice, because I bought two tickets. So it did bad, even though I doubled my watching of that movie. My AMC app must be like, really, dude?
The only one using AMC A-list.
Yeah, exactly. You're getting it twice. Yeah, this God, I hate this drama so much. I think that I dislike both of them. In like the fact that it's like, now should we just take away all Twitter and social media from celebrities? Because like these petty like squabbles that they're having. I mean, I just imagine like what Bette Davis would have been like with Twitter. Like she's just, like that's what I think about when this stuff. Like she would have been just vicious. I guess it's just one of those things where I understand he's a producer. I understand he like had most of the muscle behind Black Adam, but how is he given this much power? Like how is he given? It just seems weird that he's.
It just shows you how screwed up DC was back then.
Less
than a year ago.
Right now, I'm like, you know, we always say this, and it's annoying to say this, but I'll just quickly say it. It's just like, you know, it shows that they never really had a Feige. That's just like, you know, is almost like a Belichick where he's like, don't tweet, don't put anything on there. Or like, you know, you don't have final say. I have final say in everything.
I don't know about a Belichick because Belichick without Brady is not really anything. Yeah,
well, you know, I was just making a very light comparison. We didn't have to draw blood here. Jeez. I'm already raw enough. Cooley, the Providence coach, left after like going to freaking Georgetown. I'm done, man. Sports are raw for me right now, even though the Celtics and Bruins are doing well, but still.
Bruins are always doing well, but every year I'm like, the Bruins, this is their window, it's closing, and somehow they keep going.
It's funny you say that, because right now, like, that's what everyone's saying. It's like, this is their window. It is closing. Like, this is it, man.
My God. Oh, my God. What was your final rating for Shazam Fury of the Gods?
It was a D. You know, there's fun stuff in there. Bring the kids. They'll enjoy themselves. But like, all in all, it's just so damn hollow.
I went 3 out of 5 on this. I think I would stay there even in hindsight because I had fun with it. I did have a good time. I didn't hate watching it.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of issues that I was gonna say need to be addressed. Like they're gonna revise it.
I would like to see the cut of this. I can't remember the name. Sandberg cut.
Well, and Sandberg's like ready to be done with superhero movies. He's that poor guy, I think.
I feel pretty bad for him. Like, because I think this was just, like, kind of a mess for him to have to inherit. Because, like, first of all, like, you know, forget all, like, the post-credit drama and stuff. Like, Black Adam should kind of have been the villain in the second one. And that would have connected everything a little bit more. It would have put more asses in the seats. But you just not want to be second banana to Levi? That just seems odd. Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't know. What I do know is that John Wick Chapter 4 is a fucking blast.
Holy shit.
Right. So this is a 3-hour action fest with very limited plot. And that's saying something for the John Wick franchise because they all have very limited plot. This, to me, Sean, was one of my favorite. It actually is my favorite of the four, I've decided. Yeah. I just went down on that one. Or put that down, I should say. I went down on that.
I mean, he is John Wick. I don't blame you, man. Even I go down on him, but you know, like, clip it.
Oh dear. Oh dear. Oh my God. Anyway, this is a wild movie and we're going to talk about some spoilers here because there's one aspect I want to bring up. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for you to see.
We didn't talk about this off mic either. So I'm glad we're going to get an organic conversation out of this.
Absolutely. What were your thoughts seeing this?
This was, I think it is my favorite as well. There's still like this, like chapter 2 just echoes in my head.
I love something chapter 2.
Really love so much. So it's like, it's a battle between 2 and 4 for me, but this one was very good. First of all, like everyone's talking about the runtime. It completely justifies its runtime, like completely justifies it, which I don't expect to hear a lot. I always see like a 2 hour 49 and I start to get tired immediately.
35 minutes of the movie is the stair scene, him just rolling down the stairs.
I was getting worried because they're having like, they're talking about that final duel. I'm looking at my watch and I'm like, there's an hour. What are they going to do for an hour? And it's some of the best action you'll see.
It's
like,
awesome.
It's an elongated third act that is amazing. I mean, because it's literally the movie The Warriors. And I could not believe that it's almost a ripoff, but it's so awesome that I didn't mind. But it is like pretty much down to the radio DJ that is literally the same as The Warriors. I could not believe how great this was. And it was just so much fun action. There's 3 primary action scenes that are amazing, pretty much. There's like the entire ending. Then there is the middle where they have that big dude that looked like Steve Coogan that was just,
oh, I
like,
loved that, by the way.
What an amazing thing. Like you got this like guy that's like just like built like a brick shithouse, gigantic, and he's kicking ass. I'm sure that, like, I don't know about this. I'm sure he's some sort of like, you know, martial arts superstar. Like I didn't do any research, of course, like I always do, because like that just like makes it even better. And then they have the siege on Osaka Continental, which, you know, other than the gunshots going on, is a place I would love to stay at, because I think the production design and the cinematography are like insane in this. And it's never going to be even sniffing Oscars, but it really should get a cinematography and a production design Oscar, at least a production design. I think it's absolutely stunning.
Who was Jason Mantzoukas in this?
Was he in the fourth one? In
yeah.
the
third well,
one,
I mean,
he's one of the homeless guys, but I did not see him in the fourth one.
He's tagged on IMDb.
That's interesting. Because,
but also Halle Berry is too, so that doesn't...
Yeah, maybe it's like... yeah, there's something about the... Yeah, I don't know what's the deal with that. Because, yeah, he's not in the fourth one, I don't think. He's in the third very briefly as one of the homeless dudes.
What did you think about Bill Skarsgård in this?
He fit the role of twerpy... accent riddled like European like pretty much in every movie, where it's just there's always one who's just like an asshole that's like a higher up that probably doesn't deserve to be there, and he's just like this twerpy person. So he fits that role perfectly, and I'd love to see him there. I you know, I don't think there's anything like really like new that he brings, but I love that he was there.
Yeah, I'm with you. So talking about the runtime, one of the other contributors to the runtime is when Ian McShane is walking to meet Bill Skarsgård in the portrait gallery.
Okay, yes, okay. I that was like to the point where I'm just like, you gotta actually be kidding me. I mean, I love that setting though. It's so weird. I love, and then they're in front of the Viva La Vida cover for Coldplay, which I thought was great. It's called something else, but I love that.
Holy shit. Do you want to see who this guy, this actor is? That
this
played
is
the
big dude? Yeah.
This is wild. Sorry for those of you listening that you're not going to be able to see this, but just Google Scott Adkins.
Oh, wow. Oh, so that's interesting that he's not a big dude, actually.
No, it's kind of wild. Like here's...
That actually sort of bums me out.
Longtime DTV.
Oh, inspired by a Bruce Lee opponent. Okay, that makes a lot of sense, actually. So he is a martial arts legend, but I just assumed he was a big dude that was a martial arts legend, which would have been kind of cooler. Okay, that you know.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah, like it was so cool just seeing a big guy kick ass, because like you see him sitting there and you're like, I mean, what's this guy doing here? What's the point of him? Like what? And then like when he like won't go down and he's kicking John Wick's ass, which is great because John Wick gets his ass kicked a lot in this. I mean, that's what I love about all these movies is Sure, he dominates. He wins in the end pretty much almost every time. But he still gets the shit kicked out of him by a lot of people. He's not just like a complete and like utter domination. You are gripped by all these action sequences, which these are some of the best action sequences in the John Wick franchise. These are some of the best action sequences I've seen of all time. And the way they are presented and filmed are absolutely off the wall. And I think we need more stunt coordinators to become directors. I know that it won't be a one-to-one translation every time, but this guy, this Chad Stahelski, was a stunt coordinator, and he like started directing these John Wick movies. And I think there's something to that where he knows how to cover stunt performers. He knows, it's almost like when an actor becomes a director, they know how to direct actors. It's the same deal here. This guy knows how to like cover and film stunts in the best ways possible. And I was kind of blown away by how great this entire portion was.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's kind of wild. He's attached, Chad Stahelski, that is, to a lot of different projects moving forward.
I mean,
like Rainbow Six, which is an adaptation of the video game, Vice City, Black Samurai, Ghosts of Tsushima, Highlander. He's attached to a lot of shit, which is kind of wild.
It's awesome. Cause like, I remember, you know, like, do you remember when John Wick came out and like, you know, no one cared. They were just like, oh cool, Keanu Reeves is trying something different. Like, I don't think anyone saw it in theaters. Everyone saw it on VOD. And I remember I saw it there. I was like, oh, holy shit, this is awesome. Like, and then they just get better and better every time. I'm sort of just blown away. I was just so happy the whole time. I was so happy watching this. I think that like the technicals are outstanding. I'm going to be writing an article for like the Oscars in a couple of weeks about just like these technicals deserve to be recognized. Truly. Like they really do. I think that they should at least garner some nominations. They won't. There's no doubt in my mind. They won't, but they really should. They were just that good. And let's just talk about him now. Cause I think this was the most outstanding. Donnie Yen, man. Like, because first of all, I just found it a little bit weird that he was playing a blind guy. I thought just in general, it's like, So are they doing Daredevil? And I think it was one of those things where you see him kind of struggling with it at times. Then he becomes a superhero, just like not being able to handle it at all. But then once again, you see him like have an issue with a certain thing. You notice that whenever he gets a gun, he just takes blind shots out of nowhere at like a bunch of people. And then we'll eventually understand by I'm assuming listening, like be able to like know where to fire the gun. And it was weird because obviously it's extremely, extremely, extremely unrealistic. But there were moments where you kind of saw him having issues with his sight but still being able to dominate. And it was a weird balance that just worked. I loved him in this. Why wasn't he in these earlier?
Yeah, he was great in this. The other one I want to mention too is Shamir Jackson. Mm-hmm. Shamir Anderson. He plays Tracker in this with the dog. He was just, I loved the character. I thought he was such a good addition. And every time he would pop up, it was like, yep, that makes sense.
It was great because he like, first of all, he's just beautiful. And so I remember looking him up like in the theater because I'm like, okay, where have I seen this guy before? I don't think I've seen him in anything before, mm-hmm. but he just has like a very familiar, inviting face. He's so mysterious in his role. He is the epitome of a double agent because he's helping John Wick out because yep. he wants to be the one to kill him. So like he's like dispatching of all the assassins with John Wick so that he could eventually kill him, which was pretty brilliant. And then the greatest of a franchise character arc in all times, John Wick saves a fucking dog.
Like, oh no. That happened, yes. I was like, oh man.
What an amazing moment. I was so happy with that. It's like four movies that have been caused from the death of a dog, and he saves the dog in the end. What a beautiful thing. Ugh.
There were a lot of things in this that they did. And again, spoiler alert if yes. you haven't seen this. That made it feel like they were putting a cap on the series. And I know that they've come out and said that they're not going to move forward with a fifth for a while. And of course they have Ballerina with Ana de Armas coming. They have the Continental series that's been in the works for quite a long time.
Which I believe are both going to be like prequel-ish, I think.
Yes, I think the Ballerina movie takes place in between the third and the fourth, if I'm not mistaken. But let's talk about a few of those decisions. One is the big one at the end. They kill John Wick. They kill John Wick. Is he dead? Who knows?
It's so tough because on one hand, like, you know, hey, we didn't see him officially, like we didn't see right. a head explode or a head decap. Like we officially, like, you know, all we did is, you know, they could be just an empty casket there. On the other hand, it would be the move of this type of franchise to just kill this guy off.
Yep.
That would be something that this inventive franchise would do. I don't think they focus too much on money. I mean, I guess everything eventually money talks. Everyone's got a number, as we find out with the LIV Golf Tour. But it would be the bold move to literally just kill this guy. And, you know, yes, there's a John Wick 5. Who knows what that would be? They could, you know, fill in different stuff. They could do prequels because Keanu Reeves is just not going to age. Let's face it. But I really like that they brought him back as loving husband. I mean, you know, John Wick has like 12 lines in this in total. Like he doesn't, there's not a lot to this character.
Yeah.
A lot of yeahs. Which I do love that I think they're just like, you know, like Tarantino with feet now. He's just like shoving it in the face. I'm like, yeah, he's just doing ridiculous yeahs and I'm gonna need a gun. And I just think all of those are so great. And it's just weird because he does the silent action star, but there is, God, the slightest bit of depth to his character. There doesn't need to be a lot and there isn't a lot. But, you know, this is a guy that did, you know, lose his wife and in the midst of that grieving, lost a puppy. And so since then, he's been back in the game covering like the most like, you know, dealing with the most of his anger and like pretty much saying, OK, I'm just like taking out everything and finishing this. And
Go ahead. Can I admit that I clapped at something in this movie?
Go.
And I caught myself and I was so mad that I clapped. I was like, oh, no, I've become what I hate. Ian McShane at the end. Ian McShane has some wonderful dialogue in this, by the way. But in the final duel. Donnie Yen fires, Keanu Reeves does not. And I knew that right away. I was like, he didn't fire.
I noticed it just before Ian McShane talked.
And then Ian McShane said, I'm going to get the line wrong, but essentially he tells Bill Skarsgård, like, you selfish, like arrogant prick or something like that, or asshole. he didn't fire, and that I clapped. I was like, oh,
it's such a great moment. I will say, like, I was a little, I wish I saw this movie with you because my theater was kind of dead the whole time, which
really
bummed me. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, how are they dead? But that then they finally started to like absolutely nail it towards the end. The staircase scene they started to come alive for, and then finally, like, the like that final moment, like, everybody just erupted. Yeah. It would be really, I, God, do they keep him dead? I mean, you know. Like, just recently, I think about Bond, which obviously they'll just have a new James Bond because those movies just kind of like redo themselves. I don't think you could have a new John Wick. I think it's too different. But I, you know, like, they've never killed a James Bond before. Like, and so that was a very interesting move to make. And, you know, where that series is going to go, they don't even know yet. But it's obviously going to keep going. But John Wick is going to be the interesting one where will that turn? Where will that actually, because I don't think they want to be the people that reanimate a character or no. Just like cover up a death. I don't think they wanted. I don't think the series wants that. And I'll be a little disappointed, but at the same time, when chapter 5 arrives, I'm like, you know, no, I'm cool with it. Yeah. He's hiding in a box somewhere. You know what? Bring him back. Like, I'm okay with it. I need more of these.
Maybe they don't know. And I think they're just giving themselves, like, you know, this gives them time.
Yeah.
Essentially to figure that out. Two other actors I want to mention in here. Hiroyuki Sanada was once again phenomenal in this, was Rina Sawayama as Akira, his daughter. They were wonderful. They were absolutely wonderful.
Now, did you know there was a post-credit scene in this?
Yes. I didn't see it, but heard it was something with her, right?
It's something with her, and Donnie Yen's going to see his daughter, and she intervenes, and that's where it cuts. So it's like, I mean, let's
spin off.
Like, let's get those two in a spinoff. I mean, Donnie Yen as Kane was just like, let's keep that character cooking because, you know, I'll take 5 movies of him now, like, easily. But yeah, those two were amazing. I loved, and it's so funny because I've almost forgotten about it because there's so much crap after that. But the Osaka Continental and the siege on the Osaka Continental,
it's wonderful,
was so good. And I just loved that area and that space. And I'm like, was that an actual building? Did they design that? Because if they designed that, like I said, for the love of God, Oscars everywhere. Because it's just such a great design, so beautiful, incorporating like past history with it, and you know, just like having the camera work with him in the backdrop of John Wick, like right there. I just visually, this was so stunning. How did they do this? Where they just made like a movie so good and just such a great action movie that is just so good. You don't care about the fact that it's really stupid the world they live in. It's very stupid.
It's very stupid.
Clancy Brown shows up and he's like, oh yeah, your hotel's being evicted. Takes out a gigantic medieval like hourglass and says it's gonna blow up when the hourglass runs out.
And then they go to see Bill Skarsgård's marquise or whatever, marquee, and he has an hourglass. Like, did they time it?
I was wondering, did they like
sync it up?
Oh, I thought that was like brought over to Bill. I have no idea what it's just such a, and then you have like the woman, the tattooed what are they called, the people that put the wires in the different places. I can't even remember, they used to have them. Oh no, this is terrible.
What,
the women that used to like put like the operators, jeez.
Oh my god, that's
an easy fucking word. I don't know what's wrong with me. Like the operators that are in like lingerie and tattooed up and just like all goth, and they've been in other movies before and they're so ridiculous. The entire world is just covered in assassins. Like, it's just, there's so many of them, as we found out at the end of John Wick 2. Like, it's just, everyone's an assassin. And I think it's just, but it works. It works. And I think that this one, like, we have both publicly said we're not huge fans of 3. I still love 3, but it definitely, like, in its towards the end gets dragged down in like the politics of that weird world. And this one decided to say, you know what, we're turning it on the head. We're gonna just like literally, like, yeah, in the cold open, we're gonna kill the guy that he like hiked to for 3 hours in the last movie. And it's just like, nope, this is gonna get turned on its head. Ian McShane loses the Continental, and I thought all of that was great, where they just immediately said, like, you know, oh, all that weird politics from the first one, we're still going to have that stuff. The world is still weird. It's still goofy, but we're not going to get bogged down in the details as much. Now, there's still like weird world politics happening in this world that are just so goofy.
You have to be a member of a family and then you challenge, but it's the old rules. What should we call them? The old rules? That works.
They did have like just that's like the level of Mythosaur at this point. It's like, you know, a mythical giant being. What do we call it? I don't know. Mythosaur.
Ian McShane loses the Continental. And again, spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. He also loses someone else. Lance Reddick, who has since passed in the real world, his character Sharon is killed
very quickly in the movie, which was
very quickly.
I actually really like, and now I know why they did it. They had in the beginning of the movie the in memory of Lance Reddick, which I thought was they had it. I don't know, maybe they didn't have it in your screen.
No, because he was still.
You're right.
He died after God. I saw it.
Oh my God, you're right. Yeah, that was after. So
he died like a couple days after I saw it because I saw it two weeks ago.
And they usually put the in memory of at the end tag of this. And I like that they put it at the beginning. So they have it at the beginning of it. And I thought that was very interesting because he's only in the beginning of this movie. And so I think that was like a bold move because, you know, obviously you're going to forget about the beginning of this movie by the end because there's so much crap that happens.
Well, but I really like 4 years passes. Do you think, I didn't see an official cause of death. I know that the day of they had said natural causes were presumed. It kind of makes me think in the same vein as Chadwick Boseman, where he may have been dealing with some things and he knew it. I don't know. I mean, that's theorizing about someone's life and whatever, but it seemed really timely and interesting.
To say it in the most insensitive way possible, it worked out where it's like, oh yeah, this character isn't like, you know, still moving on and doesn't have to be written out in any way like Chadwick Boseman did in the Black Panther series. I just think that because he was in production with so many, like,
that's true.
So many movies. I think this is still this crazy sudden thing, but it's true. We still don't know what happened to him or anything. It's very, right to privacy, I'll take it, but still very, very, strange and upsetting, but I just love this movie so much. I think
it's wild, isn't it?
It's weirdly my favorite movie of the year now, which I did not expect. Like I did not expect a 3-hour movie that, you know, where the third one felt like 3 hours because of how long like they took with some of its weird minutiae details, and then this one it just like absolutely erupts with the greatest action of all time. And each one like stay like the three main action scenes like are perfectly like laddered on each other or layered on each other. You know, he has to, you know, first he's like on the run from like the assassins with really bad bulletproof face masks, by the way. I thought those were supposed to be bulletproof. Apparently they weren't. They were just for show because they show up in those face masks and I'm like, whoa, bulletproof face masks. No, they were going to try to shoot them in the face and that's their weakest point. And I was like, well, what the hell are the masks for then? Regardless. Then it layers on to like him wanting to be like, you know, back to the member of the family or getting good with the family. So they have to, he has to kill this one guy. And then finally, after everything works out for him, he has to deal with an hour of the Warriors, which I just, oh God, I can't believe that situation dropped on itself. Cause I was so worried. I was like, oh no, I'm going to hate this movie. Cause there's an hour left and it looks like it's winding down. And it just,
it comes did not
back up to the absolute amazing peak of this movie. Oh God, I loved it. Also, I just want to talk about shout out to one detail. How did they all travel?
Oh yeah,
it's Berlin, France, America.
Yeah,
and they are just instantaneously
very quickly. Yeah,
I will never be someone that does a nitpick with that kind of bullshit. But still, I was like, there were a few moments where it's like, oh yes, well his family is in Berlin. I'm like, he's not in Berlin. Oh my God, he's in Berlin. he was just in America.
This is the first movie of the year that I'm seeing again. I'm going Sunday night, and I'm very excited to watch it again.
I will probably try to take friends to this one because it's just so fun. After talking about it this much, and maybe I just need to rewatch them all again, but I think this is my favorite one just because, you know, it's close with chapter two, but this might be my favorite one.
What was your rating for this?
Oh, it was an A. And
I gave it a 4 out of 5.
What was the holdback for you?
The story.
Yeah.
The lack of story. I mean, I, like, because again, it's, I love the movie. I had such a great time with it. but like, you know, there's no story essentially.
I can't fight you on that. I can't like defend like the ridiculous story. I think that, you know, what they did outshined that for me, but yeah, I can't argue with anybody that like says like, this is really stupid. And I'm like, oh yeah, it is.
I also think it's criminal to have a 3-hour movie. Like that should be like firing squad offense.
I will usually absolutely agree with you, but this movie just didn't even feel like that. It didn't even come close to like, I will always agree with you on like top run times. And I'm telling you, I was even after like all like the positive reception, I was so worried about this being like a 3-hour John Wick movie where the last one got way too muddled in the details. It's like, I know this is not a good idea. Like this is going to go well. But wow, it was one where I just said to myself, I was like, I can't get too excited. So when I'm like texting you, I'm like, I can't get too excited. I always sleep on my reviews. I'm going to sleep on my review. And then it just, the excitement just didn't leave my head the entire time. I was like, thank you for this action movie. I'm so happy.
It is a wild ride. It is a wild ride. Sean, 55 minutes on Shazam and John Wick. Wow. Wow.
The action movies are never dead. Action movies and superhero movies, they're not dead.
Let's get into some news and talk about some of those superhero movies and what might be happening with their death. The big news out of Marvel recently is that Victoria Alonso has, it was first said that she left the studio, Marvel Studios, and then it was reported by Variety that she was actually fired. She was the president of physical production, post-production, VFX, and animation, which seems like a lot to have with one position. But she was sort of the one of the three, including Kevin Feige and another individual, who shepherded in the MCU. There's a lot around this. There's been talk about the VFX output from Marvel and how they haven't been up to snuff, but also that the VFX people were overworked because of the number of projects, whether that was film or television, meaning Disney Plus, that there was just a lot going on there. It seems as though this was a larger discussion with the studio itself. Alan Bergman, who is the co-chairman of Disney Entertainment, apparently was very involved in this decision. And Variety reports that Victoria Alonso was blindsided by this. It's probably the first major negative news about Marvel that I remember, aside from like stuff with actors, like, you know, the anti-vax stuff last year around Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. And
Scarlett Johansson's stuff as well.
And Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. And yeah. So, man, it's wild to think, to theorize about why this happened. What was the nail in the coffin for her? She is, according to Deadline today, weighing legal action against Disney. And the attorney has said serious consequences are coming, and said that it's an, quote, indisputable breach of contract. So I have no idea. What's really my favorite detail in all this is stupid. But she has a memoir coming out called Possibility is Your Superpower. Because she is Latina and openly gay. So, like, that's really unheard of in terms of executives within the entertainment business. But that book is coming from Hyperion, which is a Disney company.
Ooh, that's rough. That's a tough one. This, when I heard this, I wasn't like terribly surprised, just because, like, well, Marvel is, you know, essentially still doing great. Their one big controversy has been the VFX. Like, that has been a problem for the VFX artists. They've been stretched thin. There was recently also a release that says like Disney is the reason that it's been stretched thin, is because, you know, since Disney took on Marvel, they've just been pushing content more and more and more content. And that has been one of the big issues. And
And COVID as well. I mean, they were trying to push content to Disney Plus when theaters were closed and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I, you know, and obviously we've looked at the effects, and they've been strained a little bit. They've been a little bit tougher than usual, I think. You know, since Endgame and like all the, you know, like they used to be a lot more ambitious, and they used to be able to cover that ambition, but now it's getting a little bit dicier every time we see it. And, you know, and I never really want to blame the VFX people, because they're working their asses off and they're like pretty much mistreated. And So it did seem like this wasn't a terribly shocking thing, but it does seem like this is not exactly her fault. Now, when you listed everything she's in charge of, I thought like, yeah, no, that's ridiculous. They should be having like 10 people in charge of like all right. those things. So I think that's like part of the problem. So, you know, does she have grounds for a wrongful termination? Possibly. Contractual issues? Most likely. This doesn't look good for Marvel. Just, you know, not in terms of them, you know, being destroyed or caving in on themselves, but it's just like a bad look in general. And that's one of the biggest issues there.
Yeah, I'm very surprised by it, to be honest. There's conflicting reports about what I'm about to mention, and that is that some people were saying that she was very negative towards the VFX producers, that she would essentially, like, you know, if you wronged her, then you were not getting any additional work, and that she like kept a list, you know, so to speak. Others say that's not true, that she was the nicest person in the world, blah blah blah. But I don't know. This is kind of fascinating. Like, where does Marvel, what is changing? I know, like, you know, with Bob Iger coming in, he's pretty much saying, like, slow down with what you're doing. Part of related to this is that they're focusing on Star Wars and stuff at Lucasfilm instead of going into, like, the Indiana Jones Disney Plus series that they were aiming for. So,
oh yeah, I heard they put a hold on that as well.
Yeah, and all that's to say, like, you know, he's also slowed down the Marvel stuff. He's pretty much saying, like, focus on quality over quantity. And I wonder if this is an aspect of that. Like, if there was just, I don't know, there has to be more there. I don't get it.
Yeah, it does seem like this is just, they're turning a page, closing a door, and they're, you know, they're not stopping Marvel stuff, but they are slowing it to the essential things. And, you know, I think they need to regroup a little bit. And that would be my strategy, at least, which is a tough thing to do when you have a cash cow and you want more and more stuff, and you have like a bunch of stuff like in the docket, stuff that's written, stuff that's announced. I understand that this is not as easy as just like hitting a pause button, but a slowdown button should definitely be taking place.
Slowdown button.
I think everyone knows that, like, yeah, let's chill this out a little.
I'm with you. Sean, this is kind of related to what we've been talking about, so let's jump to this one. But do you remember Star Wars movies?
God, no.
The latest Star Wars movie that apparently is going to be announced at the big Star Wars celebration this year, or more information is going to be shared about it, was originally coming from Damon Lindelof of Lost fame and Justin Britt Gibson. Deadline is saying that they have left. And this was Charmaine Obaid Chinoy's Star Wars movie. They left, and Steven Knight from Peaky Blinders has taken over, which is sure. But it's just crazy. There's nothing known about this movie other than who the director is. Star Wars Celebration in London is where they're supposedly going to announce it. But like, what, we haven't had a Star Wars movie since 2019. Every project that they've that has been in the works seems to have been paused or, you know, kiboshed. Steven Knight, though, interesting choice.
That is a very interesting choice, and he's also responsible for writing another movie, which we'll be talking about in a little bit, that was announced, which is, you know, it's not exactly going to get him very popular either. I just want to, like, everyone peek behind the scenes of the Guy at the Movies podcast. You put on the outline, more Star Wars movie drama. I didn't even hit the link because I'm like, I don't know which one this is. Is this this one? Is this the Taika stuff? Is this the fact that, like, you know, these filmmakers are leaving where I already thought they were leaving, and I already thought their projects were, like, completely capped. Now we know for sure that they are. Maybe they'll come back. It just seems like there's, like, this repetitive cycle of constantly the same thing over and over again, where it's just, you know, directors come in, creators come in, writers come in, then they're gone again. So, you know, right now my biggest worry is if this Star Wars movie, and I'm saying that singular because it seems like only one of them's coming out, if this Star Wars movie is like average, that might be the end of Star Wars in general, because this has to be the greatest Star Wars movie of all time, like, really, because it's shouldered on everything. I don't know what they'll do after this. I mean, granted, like, their TV division is doing stellar. You could argue that Mandalorian's viewers are down and everything like that. You know, you could argue a million different things there, but they're still making great TV shows, popular TV shows, and they have a lot more in the plan for the TV show circuit. And they're building almost like a world with the TV shows, which is one of my issues with Mandalorian this season, because they're making it the, instead of it being a fun little Western show, they're making it the thing that where everything is going to get intersected into the Mandalorian, which that's not great. Like, that's not a great way to do this. So that's like the weirdness I have with this. But at the same time, I don't know, man. I think the TV is doing fine. And like, why would you even risk this with movies at this point?
Right.
But this movie's going to just shoulder so much burden. Like the whole, it's going to be viewed under a microscope. I'm worried for this movie.
So it's kind of interesting you're saying that, because there's a long quote that they have in Deadline from Damon Lindelof, and I'll just share it with you. A couple days before it was announced that he was exiting, he said, quote, I will just say that for reasons that I can't get into on this Sunday morning, on this day, the degree of difficulty is extremely, extremely, extremely high. Wow. If the film can't be great, it shouldn't exist. That's all I'll say, because I have the same association with Star Wars as you do, which is it's the first movie I saw sitting in my dad's lap, 4 years old, May of 77. I think it's possible that sometimes when you hold something in such high reverence and esteem, you start to get in the kitchen and you just go, maybe I shouldn't be cooking. Maybe I should just be eating. We'll leave it at that point.
This is a guy that remade The Watchmen into an amazing limited series, and he like into something that was like straight up impossible. And he's the one that says we can't do this Star Wars movie. It's like, this is tough for him. Ugh, boy, that does not look good, man.
Yeah,
I fully understand it too. I fully understand it. Like, I would never want to make a Star Wars movie now. I mean, not just the toxicity, but at this point, yeah, 2019 was the last one was released. If one starts now, it's not going to be released for quite a few years. It is going to be looked at like Force Awakens was. It's going to be looked at like Phantom Menace was. That gap is almost going to, not the same gap, that's a little bit dramatic, but it's going to be quite a large gap where people are going to be looking at this and examining it quite a bit. Now, sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't, but ugh, boy.
Related to this, Stephen Knight, who we just mentioned is now on the Star Wars film, is attached to a remake of Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo, with Robert Downey Jr. potentially eyed to take the lead. Stephen Knight is going to write this. And this is kind of fascinating. I didn't expect them to remake this movie, but I guess let me change that. I expect them to remake every movie. this was not one that was on my radar.
This is such a fucking bad idea, like on so many levels. This is such a tremendously bad idea. I mean, from a moral standpoint, I'll first speak from the moral standpoint as someone who absolutely adores this movie. It's like only Hitchcock can make a movie like this. It's like a perfect movie. It was number one on the Sight and Sound poll way back when. Now it's like some woman peeling potatoes, but but it's still like, it's considered like, you know, like absolutely pristine. It's amazing. I can't imagine anyone perfecting this or changing it. I'm not someone who's entirely against remakes. David Fincher still has ideas of remaking Strangers on a Train, which is also a Hitchcock movie. That could be very cool in a modern setting. I could see that being remade very interestingly. This, absolutely not. So my issue with it is, like, you know, from a moral standpoint, this is a terrible idea. But also from, and this is really important, from the financial standpoint, because everything's getting remade, like you said. Every single property is getting its TV show. Every single property is getting like another movie. Everything's being remade because at this point, the writing's on the wall for a writer's strike. So they have to they're kind of like dispatching all of this IP. It's money talks, like we talked about with, you know, The Little Mermaid last week. Money talks, and so I understand it. The problem is a remake of Vertigo is for the audience of the people that would be pissed off by a remake of Vertigo. Yeah. No one's going to be happy about this that cares about Vertigo. Everyone's going to be pissed off. I don't understand why, like, you know, I understand remaking everything. I do. I get it. Money, 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 money. That, like, it's disgusting. It's gross, but that's what the business is. Vertigo? Like, dude, it's such a bad idea. It's, and also just the think pieces on the male toxicity of it, which, you know, I think it's fascinating in the original movie. I don't think you could translate that to something modern. And I promised myself I wouldn't get mad on the pod about this. And I'm the one that put this on the outline. So, you know, like, woe is me for this. I was going to make it my rant, but I'm trying not to be mad about this. Cause you know what? They remake movies. The remakes usually suck. And then you just move on. Like, I think about the remake to Point Break. Remember that? Neither do I. But they remade Point Break. Nobody saw it. Nobody cares. And now it's a movie that just doesn't exist anymore. So good. Good. That's where it deserves to be. But it just seems stupid to even do it. So I'm trying not to be as mad as other people are here. And I've been calm since I've heard the news. But the more I talk about it, the more pissed I get. So maybe I should just shut up.
You feeling okay?
No, I'm not. I've been calm. And the problem is because I haven't talked to anyone about it. That's the issue. And so now I'm finally talking it out. And just like when you go to therapy, things just get worse because you start looking at all your bullshit in front of a couch. I don't know where this went.
Where do we go south? All right, I'm throwing an audible here with one final story. This is news about the Ghostbusters Afterlife film.
God.
Sequel, I should say, which is coming. It's scheduled to be released in December, and I believe they just started filming. I don't get that. But Camille Nanjiani and Patton Oswalt have been added, which I love. I think they're great additions. We don't know much about the movie itself, but apparently the plan is to return back to New York City and the firehouse, essentially. The whole movie is going to be in the firehouse. No,
it's kidding. Called Ghostbusters Firehouse, I believe.
I believe so, yeah.
So that's part of it.
Yeah, and Zac Efron shows up, Firestarter.
Oh, God. I was wondering where the connection was on that one. I had to rack my brain through the Zac Efron film.
I appreciate the giggle before you understood it, though.
I was like, okay, something. He's got a bit cooking here. I don't know what it is, so I'll giggle it first, and then I'll try to work it out in my
head.
I'll giggle it through first. I'm going to giggle it out, and then we're going to go from there. I also want to like highlight those two, and also James Acaster, who's a very, very funny British comedian, who's in it as well, which smart move. Get the international play in there, like have this guy in there. He's goofy enough, he's silly enough that like he would fit there as well. But you're right, if this is like kind of filming now, who are they gonna play? They've just been cast. It seems like we've talked about this before that they might be small roles, which is unfortunate. Like other times when we find out like people are cast way later, like it turns out they're just in like one scene or something. So I hope that's not the case with them, because I love all three of these guys a lot. But I first of all still have to see Ghostbusters Afterlife now. I guess I have to see that one because I have to know what's going on. Or maybe I don't. I don't know. That was wedding week. So it's like, you know, some movies had to take a back seat, and that was one of them.
Did you? I'm like looking just to make sure we're not missing any news here. You know, in John Wick Chapter 4, the character of Katya Jovanovich, that you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, his cousin. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. She. Do you know who plays that actor? Who the actor is?
It was driving me nuts when I was in. I couldn't find it though.
She plays Tonks, Nymphadora Tonks in the Harry Potter series.
Okay. God, that was driving me nuts. Well, first of all, I got like major Selma Blair vibes, although I knew it wasn't Selma Blair. I knew it wasn't Selma Blair, but I was just like I knew it wasn't Steve Coogan, even though like the big boy looked like Steve Coogan in that. Like it was driving me nuts.
The big boy was a fat suit.
Yeah, I thought it was Steve Coogan in a fat suit.
Oh my God. All right, let's move into rants and raves. I have a rave that's different from the one I listed here. Actually, I'm going to do a double rave.
Double rave it, baby.
This is our podcast. This is our podcast.
We're living life.
We're living
life. Where it goes being remade, who gives a shit anymore?
things have taken a turn. Anyway, Brokeback Mountain, which I know a lot of people use this as like, you know, a giggle fest, if you will, when you're talking about gays and such. But Brokeback Mountain is an interesting film because it's, I think, one of the very first films that did a great job of, I don't want to use the term humanizing, but it presented a very, very good romantic LGBT film between Jake Gyllenhaal and the late Heath Ledger. It was just a beautiful film. It's tragic. It's beautiful. I absolutely love everything about it. I remember when I was living by myself and what's that?
It's a great romance. Like really, like, just good, solid love story.
When I was living by myself in grad school, my first year, I ordered the DVD, and I remember I deleted it from my Amazon account like right away because like someone was going to hack me and find out. This is before I came out, and then I hid the DVD under my bed or like under my mattress. Again, I live by myself.
That is still great. I love
it. Yeah, it's wild. But anyway, it is heading to stage, which I think is awesome. But even more awesome is Mike Face of West Side Story fame recently, and Lucas Hedges are going to be the two leads. That I sent you this.
No,
this
you sent me the link. I guess I just didn't read Lucas Hedges. Or
Lucas Hedges.
I knew Mike Face. Like,
and I fucking, you know, I fucking love Lucas Hedges. He's so good. But like, this is just, that's a dynamic duo for this.
Yeah.
I will be there when it opens because I'm thrilled by this. I think it's going to be such a great, hopefully it's a great adaptation. I'm trying to like foresee the play on stage, and I mean, hey, that's why they pay people
it's
the big bucks.
It's interesting, like it doesn't feel like a play at all. So it'll be a really interesting way to do it because it's based on a book, correct?
Oh, there's music. It is, yes, it's based on a book. Is this a musical?
Is it a, no, it's not a musical. It's a not.
It's described as a play with music.
Okay, that's a musical.
The director of Everybody's Talking About Jamie, who brought that to stage, directing it, which is great because that was a big hit overseas in the West End when it first started. And also has been, you know, it's popular. The movie wasn't the best, but... And also Dan Gillespie Sells, who was the composer for Everybody's Talking About Jamie, is writing the music. So I'm excited about it. I just think that's really cool that they're adapting that. Was it Ang Lee that did that movie?
Yeah, Ang Lee did that one, yeah. I'm very happy for, I mean, obviously everyone involved, but especially Mike Feist, who is, I guess, just a stage actor now. I would love to have seen him become big in movies. He was a stage actor before West Side Story, so... I would love to see him like get into more movies.
Maybe he'll be cast as Johnny Storm in Marvel's Fantastic Four.
I'm desperate for that movie to come out with his casting because I'm getting sick of these. The speculation is killing me.
I heard Mephisto is going to be Sue Storm. That was
casting
Mephisto. Your face just went as red as Mephisto.
My face is like pretty much purple with this lighting anyway, so I don't know what's happening with me. I do not work lighting well or something, but and also I have bedhead, so you know, congrats to everyone listening. You don't have to see this face.
One other rave is I'm not going to get into it because the movie's not out yet, but Sean, I saw Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves and it's a blast. It is so damn funny to the point where I'm seeing previews for it now, and there's a new preview that they just reworked or that they just released that reworks one of the scenes that is just so funny in the movie, and I just giggle at it every time. I honestly want to see it again because it's such a fun fantasy, and we haven't had a really good fantasy like this in a while. It's just everything works about it. So just put that on your radar because it's a lot of fun.
I'm so excited for this because I really didn't think this was going to be good. I was like, the trailers didn't do a lot for me. And then I watched one of the trailers with Sam and she just laughed her ass off the whole time. And so that caused me to laugh my ass off. So I think I need to take Sam to this one. Otherwise, I think like it's kind of like J.M. Barry putting the kids throughout Peter Pan, where it's like, I think I need that magic with me. But
it's a lot of fun.
I'm very excited for that. So my rave is good old Matthew Rhys, who, you know, was the lead in The Americans. Amazing performance in The Americans. I believe he got an Emmy in his final season. And then he's right now in Perry Mason as well. And he is Irish, and you wouldn't know that because he never, ever used – he has a spectacular American accent, like genuinely great. It's one of those that feels like he's putting on an American accent, but it also feels authentic where he has like the high, like pitchy voice sort of – high pitchy is not the way to describe it, but it's got like a little bit of a gravel with it, but it's higher than usual. It's everything he's in is great. He's so charming. But I'm specifically bringing him up, not just because Perry Mason season 2 is out right now and it's really great, but also because he was in an interview on the podcast The Watch, also a podcast I highly recommend. But he is just the most fascinating guy in the world. He's so fun. He apparently, in this interview, he mentioned how, you know, he buys horses from the program where convicts raise horses. And then also one time he got a little bit drunk and he bought a boat. And so I was like, this guy... the most fun in the world. Then he just hired someone to like actually, you know, use the boat because he can't drive a boat. So I just think it's great. Like, you know, when we get a little bit drunk, we like maybe hit the Criterion sale or, you know, like buy some like little stupid
You thing. Maybe hit the Criterion sale, you fucking nerd.
I tried to get us both involved in that.
I get a little drunk and go hit the Criterion sale. Okay. Okay.
Or maybe we just order food. I don't know. But
I order food all the time. I'm like, Taco Bell.
I'm trying to give us that common podcast host ground that we so that people so starve for. Now I'm in. We're in. Okay.
But, I get drunk like, and order Criterion Phillips.
God damn it. movies, you know? we're getting there. We're good.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
he was, aside from his scene-stealing performance in Cocaine Bear earlier this year, he was in the show Brothers and Sisters back in the day on ABC. He played the gay son of the family, and not to make this about like, you know, LGBT issues and stuff, but he was let's dive deep. Here we go. I remember sitting in therapy with my therapist, and she asked if there's a TV character or something that I like could see myself in. And I said Kevin from Brothers and Sisters, which is Matthew Reese's character, because we were like, we just have very similar mannerisms and approaches and like a little chaotic in some ways, but always like, you know, tooting my own horn, always focused I think on family and, you know, wanting the best but just trying to figure out how to do that. He was so good in that series, and that's what I always remember him as. That show was on for 5 or 6 years. 5 years, 5 seasons, I think. Luke McFarlane from Brothers and Sisters, or from Brothers and Sisters, from Bros, was his husband in the movie or in the show. But that, if you've never watched that show, you have a lot to watch as it is. But Sally Field was the mom, and
I thought that was the one with Sally Field. I was about to ask. Okay,
Calista Flockhart, Rachel Griffiths.
That one. Yeah,
oh, it's so good. It was like I cried so much during that show, but in the best ways. It's just such a good show. But yeah, he's had a silently good career.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I also remember him from, he was in one episode of Girls towards the end of their series, and he plays like an author that was Me Too'd and
Me Too'd.
Yeah, basically, and the main character like went to like do a private interview, and so the whole thing is just an isolated episode between those two, and it's really good, and he's just like. But it's true. He just never. I would love to see him like perform in his actual accent because I just feel like he's always performed with that amazing American accent. But yeah. He's wonderful.
He is wonderful. All right, Sean. Let's talk about what's coming out this week. Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves hits theaters. A Good Person expands to wide and hits theaters. We also have Murder Mystery 2 hitting Netflix. Tetris hitting Apple TV Plus.
Yes! I saw your reaction.
It was fine. It was
it bummed me out a little bit. Like
I was bummed. Taron Egerton, though, is I love that guy. God.
Best supporting mustache.
Spinning Gold hits limited theaters. Spinning Gold is a really fascinating movie. It stars Jeremy Jordan, but it has a ton of other stars in it, like or musical stars. It tells the story of the rise of Casablanca Records, which founded or like promoted Kiss, Gladys Knight, Donna Summers.
Oh, I've seen this one come. Okay. Yes. I've heard about this one coming out.
And it's actually directed by the, the main character is Neil. Oh my gosh. But anyway, his son directed this movie, wrote and directed the movie. So it's like kind of a biopic from inside the family. Jeremy Jordan stars is really good in it. I didn't know much about the movie. I really enjoyed it. I watched it last week and then interviewed the director and Jeremy Jordan on Wednesday, which I'll release next week when able to. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. Surprisingly, I wasn't expecting it. It's a really interesting story, one that I didn't know much about. I love live action. I almost said I love biopics and stuff like that.
I'm very curious to see this one. Yeah, because I've heard like little rumblings about it, but I've only heard great things.
Yeah, I'll share more next week when we do the pod. Nice. But also, I have an announcement to make.
Do it. Oh, I know this announcement.
You know the announcement.
I love this announcement.
Over a year, maybe 2 years.
I think it's been 2 years. It's been since we started the pod almost.
I had this idea to do a podcast called Never Coming Soon, talking about movies that were in production but never quite made it across the finish line. And I've been working on this idea for quite a while, researching, trying to figure out the best format and all that. And I finally am ready to release the first episode. And it's on Superman Lives. It is fascinating. The story is wild. And there's a lot of really interesting nuggets in there that I think people will really enjoy. But I'll be releasing that. It will be a separate pod channel, if you will, or stream. But we'll also drop it on this stream too. And then link you over to subscribe for future episodes. Another episode coming down the pike is going to be about the previous incarnation of Gladiator 2. It loses a little bit of steam given that they just announced Gladiator 2.
Been a lot of iterations of Gladiator.
There's a lot of iterations.
Yes, you could do this.
I'm pumped about it. It's a lot of fun to research these stories, and it's really fascinating when you think about the production life of a movie and how long it takes to make a movie, how many people are involved, the writing, the effects, the costumes, the, you know, everything, the money, all that shit, and then to see a movie not just, you know, get the plug pulled for various reasons, and we'll dive into a bunch of different films throughout the first season of the pod, if you will. I'm really pumped about it. I'm so excited. I cracked the code. And when I did, I was like full steam ahead.
I'm a little bit bummed because obviously I was supporting this podcast and supporting you in this podcast, but there was a part of me that in a meta fashion wanted this podcast to never come out because Never Coming Soon would never come soon. And that would be like the most brilliant piece of art in the world where you just had like trailers for this that constantly would happen and then just never would happen. But yeah. I'm very excited to see Superman. Superman Lives is such an amazing story. So I want to see how that's told. But if you like have the chance, well, no, listen to the pod instead. But Kevin Smith goes into his story about like his experience with it. And it's just great.
Oh, trust me. I have read and watched everything I can on this. It's really wild. I think Kevin Smith refers to it as the one of the greatest projects that never got made for him. But he only did one or two passes at the script. I mean, like there were a number of scripts out there that took the story in different directions. And it ultimately, I mean, spoiler alert, ultimately never got made and led to Superman Returns a couple years later, where they didn't really take much from the Superman Lives timeline. Except for Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor, because Kevin Spacey was in the mix for Lex Luthor. There's also a number of actors that were in the mix for Superman Lives for different roles, which just it's very interesting.
I know juicy. One of them, and there's the photos of him in the Superman suit.
Well, Nicolas Cage was cast
that
as
was
Superman,
the big one, yeah.
But there's a lot of other supporting cast people that were circling, which is just it's juicy. It's juicy.
I'm in. Can't wait.
That will be coming. They'll be coming soon.
Yeah, baby. Let's hear it. I'm rooting for you, but at the same time, I want chaos.
Oh, God. I love chaos. Other than that, Sean, anything on your radar? What's coming up? Any podcast appearances? Anything like that?
Nothing really at this point. I am currently on the most recent episodes of The Silver Screen, the podcast with Mercedes Kent on Hudson River Radio. Me and Lucky Boy Reviews, we got into the Oscars and our reactions of all the Oscar stuff. Then that just evolved into like talking about a lot of other things. Like I think we went like 30 minutes on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Oh, topical. Wow. But we talked about that. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on there.
And you also were on the Dive-In Movie Cast talking about Scream, which I wasn't able to make, but it's a fun podcast. Definitely listen to that.
It's a good time, without a doubt. That was a few weeks ago, so I totally forgot that was occurring. Yes, that one as well.
Yes. My dog is currently biting my toes, so I think that is a good place to wrap things up here.
He's putting the red light on.
Yeah, he's like, listen, you haven't paid attention to me enough, even though he just slept on my lap for a half hour.
Oh.
Anyway, Sean, John Wick Chapter 4, go see it again. And is Dungeons, I'm assuming, is your Thursday movie?
It's going to be my Thursday. Yeah, I think it's going to be my Thursday this week. Yeah baby.
So excited. Okay, bye.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.